Hello, my name's Paul Kleinerman. I'm a professor at Oxford and I'm the host of this podcast on immunology called To Immunity and Beyond. So this is just to say that what we're putting forward with the podcast is a scientific discussion, and it's really just for information, and it isn't in any way medical advice. So if it's medical advice you're after, please go and talk to your doctor or some other medical professional. Meanwhile, enjoy the podcast.
Great. Well, welcome to another episode of To Immunity and Beyond. It's the first podcast of 2026, and I've got Hashim Kuhi here from the WIM. Welcome, Hashim. First up, maybe you could introduce yourself to the listeners and explain a little bit about how you got into this. You got a very interesting position and come from a slightly unusual background, so perhaps you could explain how you got here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Paul, for having me here. I feel really honored to have the first episode of the new year. I think I wasn't planning for that, but now it's good for me. And happy new year to your audience. You are right. I am Hashim, and I lead a systems biology group at the Federal Institute of Molecular Medicine at the interface of immunology and data science. But as you mentioned, my route and my background is very unusual. By no means I'm immunologist. I haven't taken any traditional route or any classical route of doing immunology. I didn't even take any course in immunology, and I just started reading them when I was actually in the project and just out of curiosity.
And what was your background then?
By training, I was a mathematician, and I was actually a very, biased towards mathematics, very geeky person. I participated in the number of competitions in the country, and I had this very crazy mindset that the whole world can be explained by pure mathematics. And then I started my PhD in our country back in Iran. The PhD program is 4 years. And at the time, we had a scheme that each PhD student could spend 1 year abroad. I first decided to go to Canada, and I did everything, basically. But 9/11 happened, and then the university wrote back by email that perhaps your family can't come with you, and I basically changed my mind. I came to Warwick University to work with a professor, very renowned professor in ring theory. That was basically my specialty. And it was in Warwick University that I came across with systems biology, and in particular Professor David Rand, who was at the time the director of Maths Institute, a very renowned and very smart person and very impactful, actually. He's a person changed my career. That was the point I slightly, started looking into, okay, what we can do with these theories that we learn in pure mathematics. So I talked to David, and then he had just established a systems biology department, and they needed some people from different basically backgrounds to form a multidisciplinary research environment to tackle some of the questions at the time. And they offered me a position, but the problem was that when I applied for visa, because I didn't have my original certificate of my PhD, because the country basically, something I forgot to tell is that I went back and defended my PhD and came back here, then they offered me the position, but my original certificate was missing because the government, the Iranian government, didn't give me the original, but just a copy, and that was their route. So the Home Office rejected my application, and then they gave me 48 hours to leave the country. It was very stressful. I talked to a student representative in Warwick University. They helped me, and they said that they know they cannot do this. And then I got a little bit more time, and then David came along and said that, okay, why not if we offer you, instead of a postdoc position, a PhD position? And if you, the salary will be the same, everything will be the same, you will be allocated to this project that we perhaps I'll briefly mention what was it. And if you successfully deliver this project, you will get another PhD from Warwick University that basically make you no need to your Iranian PhD. And that was actually the best solution. So I did that. I finished that project. I developed alignment. At the time, you know, it was just it was 2007 up to 2010. And it was after human genome sequencing. And, you know, the modern research was to just sequence a genome and get a Nature paper or Science paper or something like that.
Good days, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the key question at the time was that, okay, what are the regulatory regions in a genome and how we can identify them? Because this is very different from coding part of the sequence. And at the time, I developed an alignment-free mathematical model to help us to identify this. We used in a collaboration with the Stanford University for Drosophila genome. And then I moved to Sanger Institute to continue the same line of research, which was, you know, transcriptional regulation and gene function. But at the time, we were getting ChIP-seq data. There were quite a lot of, you know, compared to 5 years before that, it was actually quite a lot of data. And I came across with this DNA hypersensitive, and I became interested more in epigenetic of it. And I was working that a number of publications there. Then I moved to Abraham Institute. And there were actually quite a number of different projects to choose with. But I was interested in immune system, and I chose one that they told me this is a little bit complicated and no one is interested in taking over this project. And it was to understand, to basically, you know, do modeling of B cell receptors and immune repertoire, antibody repertoires, to understand how our immune system loses its deficiency as we age.
Okay.
And that was the beginning of basically my route to immunology, and I loved it. I worked on that project for about 4 years, and then I moved to Oxford back in 2017, and I expanded my interest on T-cells, and actually I became more interested on T-cells for a number of reasons. And at the time, one immunological or medical question that caught my attention was that basically this heterogeneity of response to various immunotherapies, in particular checkpoint blockade treatment. And obviously T-cells are a key players in all sorts of immunotherapies, and that was the beginning, and I just dig further. I noticed that I know basically very little. Since then, I have been basically, you know, involved with T-cells, and the main focus is to understand the rules of T-cell recognition of antigens.
Great. Well, that's a very good introduction, and there's a lot in there, but that's the kind of focus of the work. And I know you've written this this sort of review based on your very, you know, nice conference that you had a few months ago. That sort of outlines some of your thoughts, I think, in this area. So, you know, maybe people won't have read their review yet because it's not published, but maybe we could give them a bit of a sneak peek. So what do you think? So we're facing a really interesting question where we have a lot of information emergent essentially around T cell receptors, and everybody wants to be able to use this information to understand better the kind of overall scope. So what do you think the kind of cornerstones of this approach should be? Because people are running around trying to do it all different ways. But you've got a good perspective on it. So
yeah. You basically pointed it very well. I mean, because of the role that T cells play in our immune system for all serious human diseases, from autoimmune disorders to cancers and cancer immunotherapies and infectious diseases, it's really at the heart of all serious human diseases. You know, we know very little how to basically harness the power of T-cell immunity. If we know the rules, if we know the rules better, then, you know, we will be in a better position to understand how these diseases, you know, initiated and progress despite of, you know, being under the light of, you know, T cells that are supposed to protect us and other immune cells, not just T cells. And also to develop some immunomodulatory treatment. So the stakes are very high, I mean, in terms of immunology and medical science. But at the same time, there are some other factors that actually, you know, come to play. One is this breakthroughs in data, both in terms of the amount of data because of the experimental technologies that we have, we can generate, and also the techniques that we have from, you know, either machine learning, statistical inference, large language models, all sorts of AI models. So it makes this question a very hot topic for researchers, you know, among a number of disciplines, which is good. And actually, there are some good progress, but the progress that we are making from my point of view, compared to, you know, other applications of AI in other disciplines, is not that much. I mean, the progress is very marginal. It's very, you know, little. So the question is, why? And what we should do to do better? So that was the reason that I have done actually a number of things, you know, in parallel to my research to understand the rules of T cell recognition. I've tried to develop a community around this topic because I believe that, you know, together we are stronger to deal with this, in particular if we are working from a number of different disciplines. And also discussing openly the opportunities and the challenges. And therefore, last year I had a conference that, you know, based on the feedback that I got, it was very well received. It was called Unraveling T-cell Recognition, Insights from Immunology and AI. And it was parallel with the hackathon that we designed specifically for that. And the unique thing about hackathon is that basically this is, you know, reflective of my philosophy and my, you know, thoughts to how to deal with this question. Wasn't, you know, an entirely computational competition to force for accuracy or just prediction, but rather to understand the underlying mechanisms of T cell recognition of antigens.
When you say prediction, what you're saying is if you were given a TCR or a set of TCRs, the ability to predict what antigen or at least MHC peptide complex they would be reactive to, is that the...
Yeah, exactly. What you mean? Very, you know, generally speaking, there are two aspects of this. On the one hand, and both actually very critical and very important from immunology and medical point of view. One is that if they give you a T cell or T cell receptor, can you identify what target antigens they can recognize? And usually when it comes to the data level, what we refer to as antigen is a short peptide, short, you know, stretch of protein that is presented by a MHC molecule. It's, you know, very specialized antigen presenting molecules. So if we can identify these antigens, then obviously this is a very big achievement in the field and it will help us quite a lot. And the other way around, if they gave us an antigen, again here, you know, we can think of a peptide and the MHC molecule that present that antigen, then which TCRs are likely to be a target for this antigen? So people usually play with this to either this first one or the second one. And, you know, usually they either call it as mapping T cells to their target antigens or, you know, just predicting the targets or reconstructing a map between T cells and their antigens. Yeah.
Okay. So What do you think the field should be doing to approach it then, that, you know, on the basis of all your interactions that you've had with your conference and so forth? Is there a consensus about how we move forward?
Yeah, there are a number of things, actually. One, perhaps as simple as I would like people to understand, is that we should manage our expectation. Okay, here we are not facing with a simple one-to-one map between T cells and their target antigens. It's a very complex language, and as you said earlier, there are two basically important T cell specific features are actually in place. One is T cell cross-reactivity, where we have one T cell, you know, reacting to many antigens. And its mirror is T cell common specificity, where we have a good number of T cells, they are recognizing one antigen. This is the way T cells work. I mean, you know, in evolution, they have been, you know, evolved to basically work this way here. And therefore, if we don't understand the principles of either T cell cross-reactivity or T cell common specificity, then, you know, just aiming for improving accuracy, I don't think we will make a big difference in the field. So the first one is managing our expectation, putting the assumptions right, and knowing that, or let me put it actually, you know, under the umbrella of the concept. We should have a good concept of what we want here, what we are looking at here. The second one is the data. The second problem that we are facing here is the data. There are actually different ways of looking into data. One is that, yes, we have huge amount of data, and this data is actually exponentially growing. But first of all, our understanding of data is not, you know, increasing at the same pace as data is increasing. We are lagging behind.
And do you think the data is coming through as paired TCRs? Because that's really important, isn't it, to understand the clonotype, not just...
It is, and that is basically what I was going to mention. So there are actually problems here. A limited amount of data that we have are paired TCRs. I mean here paired TCR and their target antigens. But there are actually a number of problems here. First of all, they are coming from very limited or handful of MHC molecules and a very limited or very well-known antigens or viruses. These are not representative of immune system. And what we learn here, or if we train models here, they are not going to be basically generalizable to other systems or other MHC molecules or other antigens. Therefore, we have much more work to do here. Perhaps if it comes to data generation, we need to basically generate data tailored to specific questions and approach this fundamental question of understanding the rules of T cell recognition per context, per condition, per disease, not, you know, think that one prescription will fit all. That is, from my point of view, mm-hmm. not the right one. Yeah, and then we also have huge amount of orphan TCRs. Actually, these orphan TCRs, first of all, in terms of the quantity, are order of magnitudes higher and more diverse compared to TCRs paired with their target antigens, and they offer quite a lot. But unfortunately, for some reasons that I personally don't understand, I mean, I understand some part of it, but I don't fully understand is that why is that our main focus is just for paired TCRs and we forget about orphan TCRs in the era of some, you know, attention learning or self-supervised learning or deep generative models. I mean, you know, there are very powerful AI technologies that they have developed specifically to deal with situations that the data is not paired with their labels.
You say orphan, you mean single alpha chains and single beta chains, or you mean things which are not linked to any particular antigen specificity?
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry that I forgot. Yeah, here orphan TCRs, I refer to situations that we have the T cell receptors ideally pair chain alpha and beta, but we don't know biologically or experimentally which antigens they are reacting.
That must be the majority case, I guess, if we're sequencing in an unbiased fashion, we only know a very small fraction.
Exactly. Yeah. That is the reason, you know, I said we have orders of magnitude higher number of orphan TCRs in the field that we don't leverage at the level that we should do, I think.
You mentioned in your review that I was looking at a couple of really interesting things, three I would say. So one was linking these TCRs to function with the sort of view that, you know, the selection of a Treg is going to be different from that to a conventional, let's say, cytotoxic T-cell. I thought that was really fascinating. My sort of instinct was that the function would often be driven much later on according to, you know, the context. But if there's, is there some more depth to that? Is there something that we can, could you look at a TCR and say, oh, that looks like a Treg?
Well, absolutely. I think one key reason that I brought up this, to put it in the context for audience to basically understand what we are talking about, in this perspective paper, which is under review for Nature Reviews Immunology, I have put together about 8 questions that I believe these are, or theoretically, these are the questions we should be addressing first before jumping to the deep side of the ocean, which is trying to map T cells to their target antigens. And one of them is that if they give us TCR sequences, can we say this T cell, this TCR is going to be a conventional T cells or a regulatory T cell? And the reason I put it there exactly was this, controversy that is in the field, because I have seen some publications coming out and they claim that to fairly accurate level, they can predict given a TCR, is it going to be a conventional T cells or regulatory T cells? Whereas some other, I argue that no, this is actually not going to true biologically or immunologically. So this gap shows that we know very little here, and therefore it needs more investigation and more digging here to better understand, okay, to what extent we can do this, what other factors are in play, and to understand those immunological features that actually play a role here.
Okay, so it's an open question.
It is an open question. But.
There are a couple of other ones that were really interesting. So one was about a public TCR. So that's, those are very interesting because everybody has got a very free choice, but somehow they always use the same ones, or they reliably use the same ones. So what's the emerging kind of view on that? Or what was the consensus view from your conference?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, similar to T-Rex and a conventional T-cell, for all of these 8 questions that I have put in that manuscript, there are some basically debates from both camps. Actually, there are many more voices, but, you know, generally speaking, from 2 different camps. And similar to T-Rex situation, another one is, as you said, this public versus private. Public T-cells or TCRs are those that, you know, we see them, we identify them in more than one individual. And immunologically and medically, these are potential to very, you know, great outcomes. Perhaps, you know, if you manage to use their power, perhaps, you know, because it's a public in bigger population, you know, the treatment that you are going to design with that, it will be more effective. But there are some issues there from both biological perspective and also technical perspective. The simplest is technical perspective. For instance, you know, if we want to look into an immune repertoire, the chance of getting a public TCR depends very much on how deep you are sequencing from the repertoire. If you deep enough, if you sequence deep enough, chances of, you know, getting some sequences in 2 different individuals is more. Therefore, if we don't get something, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's private, it's not public. Therefore, how we are going to take these things into account is, it's a technical question, but it's a fundamental, directing our research and in our conclusions and the outcome of what we are getting from the model.
But I guess it raises an interesting point, because a lot of the most interesting TCRs that are linked to a particular antigen are going to come from tetramer studies and 10x, and when you're already down to maybe 1,000, but possibly less cells per person. So unless we can really scale this up, we're always going to be sort of scratching the surface of the repertoires, I suppose.
Well, exactly. There are a few studies out there, although these are not at the paired chain sequences, but just one, these so-called bulk sequences only on beta chain, that in terms of the individual that they have looked, it's a good number. I mean, we have studies looking into hundreds, or some studies recently thousands of individuals, which is much better than few individuals. But again, its own limitations, and we have to take our observation.
Okay. I guess you're trying to set the ground rules before people go crazy collecting all these data sets to sort of understand why are we collecting the data, what are the best design studies, and presumably common pathways to deposit and analyze the data.
Well, absolutely. There are a number of things that, I'm trying to come across. One is that, as I said earlier, to have a better understanding, the concept, to manage our expectations, basically. What is it that we are going to answer? What questions we are basically asking? And then data. We need to generate the data tailored to those questions, and the design of those experiments needs to be done very carefully and very thoughtfully. And also, know that different conditions, different diseases will require, different rules perhaps. Very generally speaking, sometimes, one thing I tell myself is that when it comes to immune system, one thing I like about immune system is a learning system. They are always, progress, evolve. Mm. Although it's really difficult, but there are a number of considerations here we need to take into account. One is that if we think that immune system is just one stationary system, it's a little bit simplistic. I'm coming from a maths background, and I am very well aware that, the best strategy for a problem is usually to start from the most basic assumptions and models and start building on top of that. But staying there and thinking that is the whole situation is also wrong. Okay, we need to know that, what we are looking at, what the complexities we are facing. And the other one, as we discussed before this episode start, is that the immune system actually evolves under different constraints. So if you develop a vaccine a bit later, I don't know, it's you know better, a few months later, a year later, immune system basically, because the virus evolves differently, immune system evolves differently. And therefore, these constraints and the rules that, immune system uses to understand these constraints is key, and we need to aim for understand these techniques here, and not to just bypass these basically constraints. And the other point that I'm trying to basically deliver is that we live in an era of AI and data science hype. Obviously, AI is very powerful, and we have seen its power in different aspects of our lives, but there are a danger here. At the end of the day, I believe that AI should act like a microscope to help us to see something. Mm-hmm. And not just to try to predict, and at the cost of not understanding what's going on. In our case, we try to decode the rules of immune system, the rules of T cell immune system. if we just use AI to map one given TCRs to target antigen, putting this in the context that the data we are having is very limited, very segmented, then surely those predictions won't be reliable and won't actually let us to understand the underlying mechanistics of this immune system. So these are these things of the, you know, things that I really want people to see. And when it comes to this whole business, multidisciplinary strategies is important. People with different disciplines, with different minds, with different questions should be on, you know, around the table to basically come across with good design, generating good data, employing good models to answer those questions. Yeah.
And validating the model.
And validating, of course. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
So, yeah, so I guess the AI bit is, there's a sort of, seem to me to be two elements. One is like purely looking at sequence and target, and the other is taking advantage of the structural information, which has got its own kind of AI base.
Absolutely.
To do, and that presumably the two bits can be combined to give you more resolution on the likelihood of a given interaction. Is that something that can be done at the moment?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the turning point, at least for us in immunological field, was AlphaFold in terms of, you know, structural. And to be honest, from my personal point of view, despite of all this terminology that we hear in literature, AI, and sometimes, unfortunately, I see that in a manuscript, they are basically using a simple either random forest or support vector machine, but in the title on abstract, they use AI. Yeah. It is only AlphaFold that is a true AI model that we have seen. And they offer quite a lot, although AlphaFold and similar models for predicting structural configuration, they do not work well in the context of T cells and peptide MHC complexes as, you know, other general protein sequences. But your point is very, very valid and very important. Yes, they offer quite a lot. And we ourselves actually use it. First of all, we investigate if they don't work well, what are the roots of the problem and how we can answer those roots. And then how we can combine these two sources of information, one structural configuration, obviously, and one sequence information that we have, in order to understand a better understanding of T cell recognition. And yeah, perhaps I can give you an example for this. You know, one technique that in the field we have seen, and it's very powerful, and in different questions and different contexts it has been used, is this so-called yeast display strategy that people use. And very generally speaking, how it works is that you have a TCR and you want to identify their target antigens. So what you do, you pick up a yeast molecule and your MHC of interest, and then synthetically generate all the possible peptides attached to this complex, and then put in front of your TCR, and eventually some of them will be basically attached to TCR and you will have complex. So this is very powerful, although it has its own limitations. Now, the question we are asking is that, can we really do something similar at the AI level without needing, you know, any of this experimental? So what we do here is that, first of all, we need to basically make sure that the model that we use for predicting the complex TCR peptide MHC is reliable at the level that, you know, we can rely on. And the second problem that we are facing is the speed and the efficiency, because here we are looking into billions of combinatorial, basically, space. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, we have addressed this. And now the question is that, you know, the next step is that we introduce mutation at each position for all possible mutations. So if you think of a nine pair, start from position one and you have 20 amino acids each time introduced. And at the end of the day, what you will see is that some of these mutations, they don't have much impact on the complex. Complex still is there. That the meaning of this is that that mutation, that mutated peptide, still is a target. But some others, they will actually make this whole complex fall apart. Mm-hmm. And that will be basically that mutation, makes this a non-target. Still, it's an ongoing project. We don't have the results, but if successful, then you see that it will be very important, and we can at least pinpoint some T cells very quickly and with a much lower cost compared to needing going to this months of experiments.
No, that's very interesting. And of course, if you look at some of these variant ligands, so you get into this really interesting area where there's sort of partial agonism or antagonism, which is yet another dimension to the whole thing. And I think my last question, I can't resist it really, was about unconventional T cells, because, you know, their repertoires are classically much more restricted, although not completely. So something like a mate cell. So, and we can generate, huge data sets on those. Because they're quite abundant. And I just wondered whether they might, although the ligands are somewhat different, at least in terms of the interaction, it's sort of the principles are the same. So can we learn from those? Because it might be a slightly simplified problem.
Well, absolutely. And you are very, very right. I mean, this whole business of looking into the same question, but in the context of unconventional T cells, is on top of my to-do list. But for two reasons, I haven't actually, done enough. One is that, unfortunately, this conventional T cells is, broad enough and deep enough that I never, feel a stop point that, okay, I'm okay now, let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
And the other one is basically the unconventional T cells, again, very broad and, and in particular, I know that you are interested in mate cells. I haven't done much in mate cells, and therefore, unfortunately, I don't want to go that direction. Yeah. But I have done a little bit about CD1A specific cells, because I already have done a little bit of work here for exactly the same reason here. What we are facing here, we have only one lipid presenting molecule, and that was CD1 molecule. And this, putting in the context that when it comes to traditional peptide presenting molecules, that in humans we have tens of thousands of them, and those tens of thousands in theory and in computational level means, order of magnitude or, a combinatorial space for variation. Here, you are facing with a much simpler system. Therefore, it must be a much simpler system to look into. And also, CD1A, as far as I know, again, I'm not an expert, is, the lipid goes inside the pocket, and it's very little, basically, contact between T cells and the lipid, but it's just T cells mostly with the CD1A molecule. And again, this theoretically means that you should be facing with a much simpler, and therefore for me as a model developer, it's a very attractive and, considering that there is a little work out there and considering the importance of these unconventional T cells in immunology and in medical sciences. But that's nearly 2 years now that we have try to see whether we, just by looking at TCR sequences, can we say if this is a conventional MHC-restricted T-cell or is CD1A lipid-specific T-cell. We see some signals, but it's not that basically level to explain all those expectations that we have. I mean, we discuss much simpler system, but we don't see that mirror in the repetition.
I guess they might be both, I suppose, might be the problem. Yeah. Okay, well, look, I think we probably kind of rounded most of it up, but is there something else you'd like to just conclude with to kind of leave the anybody listening to the podcast with a sort of sense of where it's going and what you'd, how to contact you and where to take it?
Yeah, thank you so much, firstly, having me here, and I really appreciate. I think what we are facing here is very complex, and as we discussed, it needs a multidisciplinary approach. It needs sharing data. It needs brainstorming, working with each other. And therefore, I have set up this community of T-cell recognition community. It doesn't mean that you should be in Oxford. It's basically we have a LinkedIn page for that, and people from around the world. I have my monthly webinars, and actually from next week I will have my podcast series for that. And I really like to be connected and to basically talk to people and understand and learn more about this problem so that we can make a difference. So I'll appreciate people to contact me either by my email or in LinkedIn or join the T-cell recognition community.
Great. Okay. Well, look, we will put all those links on with the podcast and any other papers that people should read to really get into this. So,
The last one is, which is still under revision in Nature Reviews Immunology, that will be actually more specific to this discussion that we had. But also, I have past few years, I have written a number of either perspective papers or review articles, one published in Nature Reviews Immunology in 2023. That is very well received, a good number of citations that shows basically, you know, it's a accessible language for people from different disciplines. And the other one, 2024, published in Nature Methods.
Okay.
You know, more or less talking about the same ideas and, you know, challenges that we are facing and how to deal with that.
Great. Well, I'm sure people will be interested to read those and contact you if they have any questions. So, Hashim, thank you so much for coming along. I'm looking forward to listening to your own podcast. So that'd be great. And if there's anybody else out there who wants to come and chat about their research so that the community here can hear more, I'd be very keen to hear from you. Hopefully the podcast will continue through the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you.